The problem with all this is we're trying to do forensics from outside the system. We don't have people inside saying, this is why they're hiding this is why they're hiding that. And even if we did, would we believe them? A lie is different at every level. And they have their set of lies that they're being told. So to really do this, you have to rely on the evidence itself. And then you have to rank that evidence in terms of the political realities of the entire culture in which you live, i.e. the United States, or the larger culture in which we live, which is the world. And when I look at the world, and I look at what's going on right now, the most intense fractional confrontations, the reasons for more bloodletting, more slaughter, more pain, more suffering, more conflict on this planet than any other, is the religious idea that my God is bigger than your God. In fact, your God isn't anything and you aren't anything either. And when you look at the presidential debates this year, what has come to the fore? Overwhelmingly, again and again and again, the religious background of the candidates. The founding fathers, that whirring sound you hear in the background is the founding fathers spinning in their graves because they tried to set up a political system where we separated politics from religion. Politics from our metaphysical ideas of who we are, what we are doing on this planet, who our creator is, etc., etc. And what we're seeing as the 21st century evolves, even in these first few years, is a blending and a fusion of religious perspectives with the body politic. And you just look at what the schism is now that is confronting everyone, which has given us the freedom, I'm using that in quotes, to create the Patriot subversions of the Constitution, to create the NSA eavesdropping. It's all about religion. It's these bad guys, those nasty terrorist Muslims, the conflict of civilizations, that those people are out to basically ultimately kill all of us. You know, the only good Muslim is a dead Muslim, which of course is what the radicals on our side are saying, even though they claim that's not what they're saying. So we're living in a levels of illusion where at the base, it's all about religious difference and religious intolerance and religious obsession that my God is the only God and you deserve to be killed because you don't believe in my God. Into that mix, you introduce the idea, a la Brookings, this official NASA report, that when NASA went out into space, it would logically find evidence of possibly more advanced beings. And it said in the charter, you know, on the moon, Mars, or Venus. Well, advanced beings would have to be created by somebody, right? Whose God would create them? Was it your God? Was it my God? So when you go to the moon, like what I have on the screen, and as part of the Apollo program, you find what appears to be the head of a robot, a sentient being created by something greater than humankind and lesser than the angels, etc., etc. And then you see that in our own fiction, in George Lucas's Star Wars, there is this stunning similarity in our popular cultural mythos. The question has to arise, who in NASA knew what when and were terrified to tell us because of the religious implications. Now, if you look at ruins on the moon, or you look at ruins on Mars, particularly if you have a mile-long face on Mars, mile plus or minus, and it looks like us, remember, there's this key phrase in the Old Testament, God created man in his image. Oh, wait a minute. If that's true, then what is this mile-long face doing lying on Mars? Mars isn't mentioned in the Old Testament. Who were the Martians? Were they created in God's image? Is that God's image lying in the desert? In other words, you begin to get into such levels of discourse and such levels of potential controversy and conflict and people killing each other over their version of the truth that Brookings said in 1959 and John Kennedy gave it to Congress in 1960, on April 18th. That it's better to leave all of this alone, to not let anybody know about this, because all they'll do is kill each other over whose God is behind this new version of the truth. And I think, based on history, right on CNN, right now, that that's the ultimate reason, which has been used as an excuse, incidentally. It's the lie is different at every level. It's the excuse based on some stuff going on in our culture that if, in fact, people were to know unequivocally that we're not the only conscious beings in the universe, the level of religious factionalism would rise to an hysteria, and we would literally dissolve in whatever conflagration you can imagine. And that a lot of good people, remember, there are good guys and bad guys, a lot of good people are going along with this because in their minds, to quote, you know, Nicholson, we can't handle the truth.
Okay, so NASA is out there to protect us from the truth because we can't handle the truth. The truth being...
But according to whom? Remember, it's always according to who's writing the script.
Okay, but what according to what you're telling me...
I'm saying some good people in NASA believe that.
Okay, but
others believe other things.
You're saying this is the main reason for the secrecy.
I think it's the main reason they've been able to get so many people to go along with it for so long. Because remember, everybody wants to be a good guy.
Right.
Do you wake up in the morning thinking you're a bad guy? No.
No.
You think you're doing something positive.
That's
you're advancing
I'm a good guy. No.
You're advancing humanity. You know, doing these programs, putting it on the internet,
yes.
Putting, you know, you're trying to expose the truth because the truth will set you free. Well, what they have been told is the truth will kill you.
Exactly.
And
okay, so but
they
if...
have believed it. That's the key pernicious thing here. They have ignored, in many cases, their own Bible, and they think by suppressing the truth, they're making us free.
Okay, but let's get to this truth. What you're telling me is the truth is that the ruins on the Mars and Moon indicate that we are not alone.
Oh, that's not the issue. The issue is, are we involved? Are they our ruins?
Are they?
I'm asking the question. Are they our ruins? Did the great-great-great-great-grandmothers of the human race created in God's image.
Right.
Put that stuff
well,
there.
Well, if they are our ruins and they were created like us and they were us, our ancestors, whatever, then we don't have a religious problem because, hey, they're our ancestors.
Or if they're not and they were created by super alien beings who made us as a laboratory experiment and put us here to do what we're doing, which is not very good, then those guys become God. We're
right.
Eavesdropping, we're trespassing literally on God's territory as you define God, which is not the big guy that I've been thinking of all my life since I grew up reading the Catechism, but something lower than the angels that basically is as fallible and as human and as mortal as all of us, but has been someone playing God. Can you imagine?
Is this your premise? Though. Are you investigating this?
Of course.
When you're looking at these ruins?
I'm investigating all of this.
Okay.
The problem is how? It's very hard. It's really, really hard because you can't trust people who would tell you the truth. You have to find the original sources. And ultimately, we've got to go to Mars or the Moon and find the libraries. But then, of course, it's like, who's going to read them? Who's going to translate them? How do we have checks on the translators? How do we know the translations won't be cooked? That they won't be faked to abide with certain creeds, affirm that certain gods are real, or a god, but the other guys are pretenders. This is not a simple labyrinth. This is down the rabbit hole, through the wormhole, out to the other universe, back through the white hole, into the other galaxy. It is not simple, which is why it has waited 40-some years for the beginnings of a ray of sunlight where people actually now finally, ultimately want to know the truth. And that gets back to the numbers and success of Dark Mission. Because ultimately, what has been pacing all this, what has allowed this suppression of the truth to continue unabated for at least 50 years? People, you guys out there, you have wanted it. You haven't wanted to know the truth. Because if you really had, you would have known the truth a long time ago. You're the problem, as opposed to being the solution. And just now, those of you who are watching are possibly becoming part of the solution to finding the truth.
Now I want to ask you, if you're investigating what we found on Mars and the Moon, and you are, clearly, you've got documented evidence that you're you know, tracing this incredible dome, right, made out of, I don't even know what, on top of the moon that covers.
Well, it's several domes made of glass.
Okay.
The simplest explanation is it's made of glass. The reason is because when we look at the Apollo analyses of the stuff they brought back, which I by and large believe in because it's like, why cook those books, which is the chemistry? Overwhelmingly, it's silicon dioxide, which is glass.
Okay.
It's also what the Earth is made of. You know, how do you make glass here? How do you make huge, beautiful windows like this? You basically take the most common elements in the Earth's crust, you heat them up, you know, you refine them, you know, you melt them, you put them on these steel plates or rollers, and you roll it out, you press them, you know, and you make sheets of glass, plate glass. So it looks like the lunar ruins are made out of the most common material you find on the moon, which, by the way, when you make ruins, structural buildings out of glass on the moon, they're 20 times stronger than steel. And the reason is there's no water on the moon. There's no atmosphere. There's no impurities that get into the glass that make it weak and brittle.
Hmm.
So on the moon, glass is a structural material. And it has, I mean, if you dope it with various minerals, metals, you can make it do all kinds of cool things. Like you can make it photochromic, where when it's exposed to sunlight, it gets dark, like sunglasses, you know, where they darken down automatically. And then as the lunar night would come, it would open up. You could make it radiation resistant. You could make it semi-transparent, so only certain wavelengths come in. Other wavelengths are blocked. I mean, on the moon, on the front side, if you're at a place called Sinus Medi, the middle bay, when you look up directly overhead, there is this gorgeous Earth hanging overhead, spinning on its own axis with clouds day after day, week after week, month after month. The best real estate on the moon to see the Earth would be right there, and that's where we found our first amazing set of ruins. In fact, would you like me to show you what some of those ruins look like?
Sure.
Segway. Okay. As part of our lunar investigation, going back now to 1996, which is 11 years, I brought in a variety of experts in Enterprise to look at various aspects of this impossible-to-believe story at first hand, namely that Apollo went to the moon, the astronauts went there specifically, chartered by NASA, by the president, as a mandate to go and find the technology secretly and bring it back and back-engineer it, and that the Apollo, the race with the Russians to get to the moon before them, was a cover story. And we know that now because we have memos, which are in the book, in Dark Mission, from the White House, from the State Department. We have testimony from Premier Khrushchev's own son, Sergei, who was a fellow, I think, at Brown University, who confirms that from the moment that Kennedy walked into the Oval Office in 1960, after he was inaugurated on that afternoon of January 20th, he opened a dialogue with Premier Khrushchev, attempting to get him to go to the moon together. Now, logically, this is nuts. Because if we're told all these years that the reason we went to the moon was to beat the Russians, why were we going to the moon at all? Spending all that money at all? Doing anything out there? If it wasn't to beat the Russians, if in fact secretly we were trying to go with the Russians, the only logical answer is there was something there that Kennedy felt was of overriding importance to humankind, to civilization, no matter where it is on this planet, that we had to share with our arch enemies in the Cold War. And ultimately, as we document in the book, it looks like they killed him for it. And then a few months later, they imprisoned Khrushchev and kept him under house arrest until his death, you know, several years after that.
But ultimately, behind the scenes, we may have gone to the moon with them anyway. Isn't this
right? We don't know. Again,
okay.
We don't know.
Okay.
The gaps in the record are still big enough to fly the Enterprise through. What we do know is that we went. That Apollo went to the moon. We had six missions, incredible missions. We had one that didn't quite work the way we wanted it to, 13, which in itself has interesting gaps that I'm looking at in my copious spare time. But what we know now from the photographs they brought back, the photographs that I have looked at in the NASA archives, physically held them in my hands, photographs now leaked all over the web, all over NASA websites, all over the world, for anybody to download and use a modicum of image processing, like Photoshop or CorelDRAW or whatever, to Basically, turn up the gain, turn up the brightness. Look at what's in the sky, which should be totally black. You'll find this. Now, this is actually a perfect, idealized version of what you're going to find. This is a grid created by one of our experts, an architect named Robert Firtek, who we talk about in the book, who I brought into this back in the mid-90s to analyze the photographs and tell us what was there from a structural, constructional perspective. So what Robert did is created this grid in the computer. And then what we did was to look at some of the photographs. For instance, this is a Hasselblad image from Apollo 10. The frame number is AS1032-4810. So you can go to the archive and go to the website, download this picture, and you can see there are hints that there's something in the sky, really classic lunar terrain below. All you do is turn up the brightness. Remember that song, Turn Up the Volume? You turn up the gain. And you see this stunning grid work in the sky. Grid work which, this is a close-up now, does not belong. It's three-dimensional. It's rectilinear. It's girders up and down. It's stringers left and right. There's no doubt in anyone's mind who has anything to do with construction, has even built a house, that this is real. It's not scratches. It's not image weirdness in the chemistry bath of the developing of the film. It's real 3D manufactured stuff.
Okay.
And it doesn't belong.
So what's your theory on who manufactured that?
Well, that goes back to the photograph I showed you a few minutes ago, which was the head.
Oh.
Well, the head is kind of anthropomorphic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If we believe in biological evolution, if we believe in Gaylord Simpson, who was the expert at Harvard back in the 1960s, who laid out this kind of Bible of human development, which Carl Sagan then ran with, human beings are totally unique. The way we look, our face, our features, our proportions, two arms, two legs, all that, if you were to run Earth's history again, you wouldn't get anything looking like us at all. And the reason they say is because if you look in the oceans, you look on land, you look at all the various species, you look at the extinct species, look at the fossil record, the only guys that look like us, we now know, are genetically related. The simians, the anthropoids, the apes, the monkeys, you know, there's a family tree here. Darwin was right. There is a family to which we have somehow been derived.
And perhaps some of the extraterrestrial visitors as well.
We don't know that. You know, again, I'm dealing with actual data I can touch. I do not do UFOs because I have to depend on stories. If you're depending on stories, you're at the mercy of anybody telling you the story. If you depend on actual documented evidence that's in an archive that anybody can download, you're in a completely different ballgame. And so I listen to the stories, I try to cross-correlate them with the data, but we are data-bound. That's what makes Enterprise different from anybody else trying to do this thing. We have data.
Okay, so anthropomorphically, they look like us.
Yes.
What has that got to do with what you're finding on the moon?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
Yes. I always try to get someplace.
Sure. Right?
So back to the robot head.
Yes.
Why does the robot look like us? It could look like anything. It could look like R2-D2. Remember, R2-D2 did not look like us at all.
Right.
Cute and, you know, like almost like a little trash can, you know, yes, with blinking lights and a beam and all that. He looks like C-3PO, mm-hmm, who is an anthropomorphic robot in human image. Mm-hmm. So the fact that Apollo went to the moon and on Apollo 17, Gene Cernan and Harrison Schmitt may have seen that thing. They may have picked it up. They may have brought it back as part of their mandate. We don't know any of those facts yet because they're not talking.
Why do we have a photograph of it?
There are like 15 photographs of it.
I know, but did they take the pictures?
They took the pictures. But when you take a picture on the moon, remember, they're not looking through a viewfinder. The camera was strapped to their chest. I have a photo. The fact is, the only way you aim the camera was with your body in your spacesuit.
Okay.
And you're sitting behind a
Hasselblad
glass. Hasselblad, very high quality camera. But they're not looking at the scene. They're looking at the scene and they're taking pictures by moving their whole body, so they may not have even seen this. It was so far away. It's in the bottom of a crater, which is the size of a football field.
Well, who found it?
I did.
You did?
I'm the first guy to find it, of course. What do you think? That's why you're here, aren't you? That's what we do over here.
Okay, yeah.
You know, read the book.
You found a robot head in a photograph in the bottom
In 14 photographs. It was photographed again and again and again and again as part of the panorama sequence.
Okay.
We are trying now to go, we've gotten two copies of film, not just the web, but film, which was really crappy copies that were sent to us. Mm-hmm. And what I was able to do, edit, put computer robot comparison with C-3PO, I was able to take two of those images and superimpose them very carefully, one on top of the other. This is a standard photo technique for amplifying signal and averaging noise.
Okay.
Because every photograph has noise. If you do that, the mathematical equation says that you drive down the noise by the square root of the number of frames you can successfully, carefully superimpose. Ultimately, we got 14 frames to play with. I need higher resolution, but I've done some playing around in the computer with even those frames, and you get very interesting results. The two frames that were actually film that we used, we were able to superimpose them, and that's when the eyes popped out. The round irises, the camera eyes that tell me this is not a desiccated human being lying there on the moon. One of the lunar colonists that we were positing was there at one point. This is an artificial life form, a robot. We've called it Data's head. Doesn't look like Data. Looks much more like C-3PO, which opens the whole doorway to what does George Lucas know and when did he know it? And if you want, I can go there and really curl your eyebrows because we have more data that Lucas is involved up to his eyebrows in this whole interesting story and plot and conspiracy. And that's why George Lucas is so successful with those films. It's not an accident.
Okay, now I do want to go there.
We'll go there in a minute.
We have time to go there. Bill?
I have a question, Richard, if I may, which I know has been asked by some other people. I could understand how Data's head could have been captured on film accidentally, because it was quite a while back and they weren't focusing
on
the Hasselblads. But with these very large structures that you've identified on your photographs, these would clearly have been in the background for the astronauts who were taking those images. Right. Why would they have permitted those images to be in the background and all they have to do is to take the photograph the other way?
This is a photograph taken from Apollo 14. This is a photograph taken by Alan Shepard, who was the commander. Looking north, here's Edgar Mitchell, who I debated about all this on Art Bell Show in 1996. Here's Mitchell's shadow. Here's the incredible background dome that's arching over Mitchell that he's apparently totally oblivious to. And here is an inset area where, because I have an original print of this priceless image, saved from deliberate destruction by NASA, by a gentleman named Ken Johnston, in 1971, I believe, saved for 30 years and then physically handed to me in Seattle in 1995, where I was able to put it on a computer scanner, which is pretty primitive then compared to what we have now, scan it, turn up the brightness, turn up the gain, and bingo, out popped all this astonishing geometry. When I zoomed in on the print, because I could scan it at higher and higher resolutions, I found a succeeding series of really amazing, detailed versions of what was on the frame. You can see that at the horizon there is this lateral scaffolding, that there are angled, what we call them is buttresses that come down at an angle from somewhere in the distance. There's multiple leveled three-dimensional cross bracing. There's something here that looks like a bullet hole in a windshield. Like I took a 45 and shot, you know, so the glass is all shattered all around it, scattering light. Notice the color. The color is real. This is buried in the blue emulsion layers of the multi-layered ektachrome of the original ASA 64 film that they took to the moon and shot all those pictures with. They didn't make prints. They made transparencies. Then in the darkroom, they made intermediate prints. And in the darkroom, Bill, to answer your question, they took out all the good stuff.
But they also
simply erased it in the darkroom.
And they didn't have color film on the first.
No, they did. No. They had color film. In fact, they had a super color film, which is a whole other story. I actually knew the inventor at E&G, who invented it. I tracked using it. I actually had rolls of it to use myself. When I was at CBS, I went to the Cape. I had a huge gun camera built for me by one of the key photographers in the press corps. I think he was a freelance guy. He worked for AP, worked for Newsweek, People Magazine, whatever. He actually built this huge camera. It looked like a rifle. And I would aim it like that with a trigger that would trigger the 35 millimeter camera with this special film. And I took photographs of the launch of the Saturn V on Apollo 8, the first mission to the moon. CBS then flew me by helicopter from New York to Boston, where the lab was, and out to the lab, and Charlie, my friend Charlie Wyckoff, developed while I watched that film. I then took the helicopter back to New York, and we put the film on the air to show what the Saturn V launch would look like with this incredible super extended range color film, which NASA had developed secretly to take to the moon. They then destroyed the lab that was built specifically to make this film.
NASA destroyed the lab.
Well, Kodak, at NASA's behest. Because Charlie was asked to give the film to Kodak as part of a evaluation for eventually putting it out in the marketplace so you and I could basically have... That's, by the way, what the gold film now that is commercially available in drugstores, that's a version of Charlie's super wide latitude color transparency film. It was taken to the moon. They used it to take the first generation pictures with those Hasselblad cameras. They then brought it back to the dark rooms in Houston. They then made intermediate generational copies and prints. And in the dark room, all the offending ruins were removed. This is why this print is so important, because this is from a first generation unaltered print without the things taken off.
It was the movie color film that I was referring to in Apollo 11 that wasn't used, but it could have been. Am I right about that?
Well, they had a color camera. Right. And they had a black and white camera. Okay. They only used the black and white, and they used it in a reduced sensitivity mode, because if they had used it in the original design mode built by Westinghouse, it would have shown the ruins behind Apollo 11. That's, by the way, why the original Apollo 11 tapes have disappeared. They dare not let them loose with modern computer technology. Can you imagine what we would find on them?
Sure.
Except those shadowy figures dancing around on the moon, where there, if you know what you're looking for, even on those pictures there are hints, but there's this enormous element of plausible deniability, because people can say, oh, that's just bad photography, bad lighting. So there's no proof. This is now the inset showing Mitchell, and showing where we did this, and showing the stunning three-dimensional geometry of the glass. We call this Mitchell under glass. And yet when I talked to him on the Bell Show and debated him, he claimed to have seen nothing. And I gave him a pass at that time, because I thought that part of the problem had to do with the fact that he literally could not see. This is now a close-up showing what I call the bullet hole. Notice all the 3D geometry, this amazing three-dimensional lattice, and you can see the stair steps of brilliant glass shining, and the lunar surface is overexposed. Because remember, this is very dim. This is probably the consistency of cigarette smoke. It is so fine because it's been beaten and beaten and beaten to death by an incessant micrometeoric rain. So after how many millions of years, there's almost nothing left. But there was enough left to take pictures and bring them home.
To piggyback on Bill's question, why would they leave any trace? Do they want someone to find it? Did they want you to find it?
Let me continue the logic train, then we'll get to that.
Okay.
This is a light curve of human visual sensitivity. Our visual sensitivity peaks in what's called the yellow-green, which is where the solar spectrum peaks, by the way, so that's probably not an accident. And as you can see, as we go toward the red end of the spectrum, it gets really low down here. This is the sensitivity curve. This is 100%. This would be zero. So it's really way down in the noise. And as you get toward the blue and the violet, it gets very noisy. So you really don't see at low light levels much of anything in the blue or the red. You may see a little bit in the green. But film, of course, has a very different sensitivity. So now we come to the astronauts. Each astronaut was outfitted, we were told, with a gold visor designed to protect them from ultraviolet light, like a sunscreen or Polaroid sunglasses or whatever. That's another NASA lie. I can prove it. Watch. If you look at the transmission curve of gold on plastic, and you look at the spectrum, and you look at the gold helmet, it turns out that the gold suppressed all the visible wavelengths of the bright lunar surface under shining bright sunlight and amplified the blue, meaning that those helmets allowed them to actually look out at the lunar surface and see the ruins of the domes. So they could aim their body cameras at any particular place to get the pictures of the ruins, which are all pervasive and all over, so there's no way they could have pointed the camera where there weren't ruins. Because they were inside an ancient shattered dome of glass where 360 degrees, this is a 360 degree panorama taken from one of the panoramas that Ken Johnson saved from the original prints, and you can see that most of the stuff is to the west, backscattering. Notice the geometry here. Then as you move the camera around to the north, this is Mitchell again. This is where the grid work was that we showed in close-up. Then you look toward the sun over here and toward the south. There's much less over here. You can see that it's almost dark, the way it would be if there was no glass. And then finally back to the west again as it begins to build up in what we call backscatter, where the light is kicked back. So this panorama taken from an original NASA print, saved from destruction by Johnson 30 years ago, somehow this print knows where the sun is. And there's no way that any accident of chemistry, development, bad lighting, light leaks, whatever. I mean, a light leak would be toward the sun, right? Why is the biggest portion of backscatter in the sky directly opposite the sun as judged by the astronaut's shadow? In other words, his very body is shielding the camera lens from seeing any sunlight.